With schools across Wisconsin reopening in a few weeks, few days, it's a great time for a back-to-school newsmakers with Tony Evers, State Superintendent of Public Instruction. Welcome back, Mr. Superintendent.
Great to be here. Thanks for inviting me.
Yesterday in Wauwatosa, you gave a speech and you talked about schools, haves and have-not schools. Yep. Can you talk talk about that?
I think...
You were at Tosa East, which is a have.
It's pretty heavy.
Define a
new term. It was great that the people I was talking to were great, and they're from across the state. And I have to just tell you this, because this kind of gets at the issue, is that they're from all across the state. They're kind of organically formed organizations that are advocating for public schools all across the state, and they started last biennium, and it's expanding significantly. Anyway, I congratulated them on being such good stewards of their local schools because they're passing referendum at a high 80% rate.
80%, okay.
I think the last time around.
So I'm going to take a note because that's one of my questions.
Yeah, so it's a bunch. But their strength, those parents and community members and retirees and grandparents like me that are all across the state doing this, they've been very successful, but they exposed big time the weakness of our state's commitment. And our state has an obligation around public schools, and we can't pass it all off to the locals saying, you know, if you want more money, it ain't coming from us, you gotta go get it, you gotta tax yourself higher. Well, I'm very happy that 70 to 80% do, but that means 30 to 20% don't. And I am a grandparent, my littlest kid is going to be going to grandkids going to be going to school in a couple of years. I want him to go to a school that has been passing referenda, are able to hire quality teachers, are able to make sure their buildings are in good shape. All those things that we want for our kids. That's not happening uniformly across the state of Wisconsin, and that's a problem. So yes, we have become, because we are compelling school districts to go to referenda, we are creating a state of haves and have-nots.
Are most of the have-not schools in northern Wisconsin are rural, smaller districts?
I'd say most of them, yes. But there are pockets of, well, I'll say this, and I think this is, you can check this out with the folks you're interviewing today.
Okay.
Will Milwaukee Public Schools ever pass a referendum? I would say no.
Okay.
And so here you have your largest city in the state, largest school district. Their ability to pass a referendum, just because of the politics and everything else there, it's not going to happen. And also the people's ability to tax themselves more.
What happens in districts, the so-called have-not districts, where referendums fail? Yeah. What are those districts forced to do 1, 2, 3, and 4 years out?
Well, in year one, they'll be laying off teachers. A small district in northwest Wisconsin, they had a referendum fail in, I think, February, or spring, they actually laid off a math teacher at the high school level. Small district, so they may have one math teacher left, I'm not sure. But then they passed a referendum subsequent to that. Mm-hmm. They hired the guy back. So laying off teachers, fewer opportunities for kids. And, you know, you compound that with the fact that we have this looming teacher shortage. I mean, if you're in winter Wisconsin, I'm not saying winter hasn't passed the referendum, but there are others up there that have not. If you're not fiscally able to hire a teacher or compete with other school districts for teachers, the kids there are not getting the same education. As simple as that.
Is this then a vicious cycle then? Because of some of these things you mentioned, northern Wisconsin doesn't have the economic opportunities, the ability to come back and stay strong in their local economies?
Absolutely. And you know, there's all sorts of things you read in the paper about we have to have better broadband up there. Hell yes, we have, not just for schools, but for our homes and communities and businesses up there. So it's a cyclical thing, and then, you know, if the economy is down in northern Wisconsin, if you're a high school graduate, you got to come back, maybe not. And the aging population percentage is going up in northern Wisconsin. But this is a statewide issue, but I think it plays out more vividly in northern Wisconsin.
You will soon be submitting your 2017-2019 budget for K-12 schools.
Right.
Are you going to go back to the recommendations that, excuse me, the governor has rejected the last three budget cycles?
We'll have some of that in there, absolutely. We have to have a funding system that fairly distributes resources.
So you're going to call for a new school aid formula?
Absolutely. And other things, too. I mean, we are going to be asking for a large increase, and it won't be large in money because we haven't hardly done anything in the past, increase in money for English learners across the state of Wisconsin, hugely growing population. We have to, A, provide more resources for them, B, find more teachers, EL teachers, and C, we need to provide real support for those kids as they're a major part of our schooling.
Getting ready though for this show, I asked the Fiscal Bureau, where does K-12 aides rank in terms of general fund spending? 32%.
Yeah.
33.6 if you add the choice and voucher schools.
Right.
So K-12 schools are already getting about a third of all general fund tax collections.
Right.
How much more should they get, and how much more can taxpayers afford?
One caveat there, that includes tax levy credit, which doesn't go to schools. And that's a huge amount of money.
Thank you.
So here's an analogy, and I know it's ridiculous, but the New York Times took a look. I think it was Trump that said, well, I want every kid to have the same opportunities my kids had. So they went back and looked at how much money Trump spent to send his kids to school, elementary and secondary, how much Obama, Clinton, George W. That's about $38,000 per kid. That's a quality education for the President of the United States. I'm not saying we're going to get there, but the fact of the matter is money does matter. It's not the only issue, frankly. But one of the problems we're having in this state is teacher shortage and the number of young people going into the profession in the teacher education programs is like going downhill. And one of the issues is they're not paid enough. Teachers are not paid enough. We used to be real high as it relates to states. Now we're in the middle and slipping all the time.
But in his speech in West Bend, Mr. Trump, which you brought up, said MPS, Milwaukee Public Schools, is spending an average of more than $10,000. And I'm loosely paraphrasing here, but he said that's a lot of money. What's your response?
It's $10,000, yes, but he's...
Per pupil.
And he's spending $38,000 on his own kids. So good for him, right? I think there are many needs in Milwaukee Public Schools, and there are many success stories in Milwaukee Public Schools. But the needs exceed those success stories, and we have to provide adequate resources for poor kids. This is about equity, and people may not like to hear this, but we need to funnel money to areas that need it the most. That just makes all sense in the world to me.
Well, while we're talking presidential politics, then you're a Democrat. Would Secretary Clinton be a better president in terms of Wisconsin's K-12 schools?
I have to correct you. I'm not a Democrat.
All right.
Nor a Republican.
All right.
I belong to neither.
Hold a nonpartisan office.
Yes. And
thank you for the correction.
Yes. I do say Democrats support me, as do some Republicans. But who would be better? As always, public education or K-12 education is not a major issue in the campaign. I would say Secretary Clinton's has a more robust answer to some of these issues, whereas I think Mr. Trump has not had an opportunity to fully vet his things. He talks about safety a lot and arming teachers. I guess I'm not real cool with that. I don't think having teachers having shotguns in their classrooms to protect kids is a particularly effective way to save kids' lives. So that kind of knee-jerk reaction bothers me. So I would say she has a more robust and palatable position.
He's also a champion of choice and charter and voucher schools. You're not.
Well, I'm a realist, too. I mean, we have what we have, and we have to make sure that those kids achieve at the highest level possible, too. My concern is, as we continue to add more pieces to the money pie, as there's a limited amount of money, it's going to mean less for regular public schools. And so that's my issue.
Well, and I'm intrigued by that because going back to the Legislative Fiscal Bureau table of the 10 largest general fund programs,
right. For
the first time, parental choice programs have cracked that list.
Yeah.
They're over the 2 years, now let's be clear, over 2 years, $493.9 million.
Right.
You're saying all that should go to public schools, but you're also a realist. You know we're not going to kill the choice program,
right. Given
the political dynamics in the Capitol.
Right, absolutely. Well, what we have to do is, A, make sure that they are achieving at a robust level, and I would say that ship has not come to harbor yet. I haven't seen that happen. But we have to realize as we continue to expand that program, that's going to mean less for others, and that's a problem for me. So yeah, it's a good kind of lesson in politics is that the Republicans, most of the Republicans in the legislature have been pro-choice. They've been very transparent about that, and they've succeeded. And why have they succeeded? Because they've been focused on that. They and the governor have been focused on that, and so it's an interesting political lesson is that. If you have the power, you say what you're going to do, and you go do it. And they've done it.
What's your greatest fear in the next session if the GOP continues to control? How much further can they expand choice and vouchers?
Well, they could take the caps off, period. And I expect that will be one of the proposals. I don't know if that will something that will emerge up front, but you know, as the process goes on, the layers get thicker, in Joint Finance Committee, and I fully expect that there will be a proposal out there to have a voucher in every kid's bed.
Okay, I woke up this morning to this headline: Wisconsin ACT scores are below the national average. We scored 20.5, but I also read, as I search for more information, we're fourth in the nation. So, is the cup half empty or half full?
Well, this is a weird year. I mean, we went from. We went from 70%, 60-70% of the kids taking the test all.
Okay.
Because it became a mandate, and I support that mandate. I think having all kids take the ACT will uncover lots of kids across the state of Wisconsin that never thought of going to college, and they will now. But that automatically means that there's 30-40% of the kids that never would have taken the ACT in the past may not be as academically prepared. So, yes, our scores, counting all those kids, have dipped. We're still 20.5, which is good. The fourth ranking is we rank fourth among all the number of states. I think there's about 17 or 18 that test all the kids.
All of the kids.
Yes.
Yeah. I see.
So this will be a baseline, and it'll be a good baseline for us. So we'll know going forward whether we're succeeding with all children, and I think that's a real important piece for us.
Well, okay, we're on to testing now, so let's talk about that.
Yeah.
There are new rules and new tests in place for this school year. What are they, and who's going to be administering the tests,
okay.
And how are they going to be benchmarked in terms of
sure.
future criteria?
Well, we'll have the same test for 2 years, which will be great as far as using that for comparisons.
And they'll be given fourth graders what?
Third through eighth, it's the same grade levels.
Okay.
Third through eighth,
once
in high school.
Okay.
And so that hasn't changed. What has also not changed? It's the same test. So we had an administration of that test last year. We feel that the test scores reveal good progress, but we have to, it's hard to judge completely on that until we have 2 years of data, preferably three. But We're on a good trajectory to make sure that we understand how we're doing as a state. So those tests will be all the same, which is great to have some consistency going forward.
Do you think most Wisconsin parents, as they return their kids to classrooms, will see any significant drop in the level of teachers, aides, computers, services this year?
In some schools, absolutely. There will be fewer teachers in some schools in the state of Wisconsin because of resources.
Will they mostly, those schools, be clustered in the northern third of Wisconsin?
I'd say northern part of Wisconsin is troubling. Southwest is a little less troubling. But yeah, and then there's also shortages in some really important areas, CTE, career and technical education, special education, things like that. So those are shortages all across the state, and there's like it's like the Wild West trying to hire those people.
Right.
And
that's a result of Act 10, is it? Isn't it?
Yes.
The most sought-after teachers can
right.
now bargain and seek the best possible deal.
Sure.
And be rated by Minnesota, Illinois.
Yeah.
So
and neighboring school districts.
And neighboring school districts.
Yeah. A small example is, and this is a true story, up north I was at a school where they had a great music teacher and taught music and instrumental and vocal, 6 through 12, one teacher, and gets poached from a school district right down the road that's from a larger school district.
One paid more money?
More, $15,000 more.
$15K in
yeah,
one year?
Yeah.
Excuse me.
One prep instead of 12.
Right.
And he likes living in rural Wisconsin, so he can live in rural Wisconsin and drive 30 miles and get $30,000 more. So that school having a difficult time finding a replacement, certainly a satisfactory replacement. Does that Wild West work? I don't think so. I don't think so. Having these free agents running around, we're not football teams. You know, we're public schools. We have a public service to provide. And you can't tell me that school that has lost that really quality teacher because of money and conditions of work is going to, that's not going to hurt those kids.
But that teacher who moves is getting $15K more a
right.
year, better able to provide for her, his family.
True.
The district that's hired, she or he,
right.
is getting a very qualified teacher.
Yeah.
So you don't like this free agency?
No, I don't like this free agency.
But we're not going to repeal Act 10.
I know. That's why we need to make sure that we provide adequate resources to those schools that are in that predicament to be able to compete, I guess. I mean, if that's the world we are compelled to live in, then let's give everybody a fair shot. I mean, right now in the NFL, I'll use baseball as an example.
Okay.
Baseball, small market teams get, they essentially, there's a tax on the New York Yankees, and that goes to the Milwaukee Brewers.
Yep.
Revenue raised by the Yankees goes to the Brewers, so the Brewers can compete similarly. Let's do that. Let's find a way to have, I'm being facetious here, but how can a Bloomer compete with a Eau Claire when it comes to teachers? They can't. So I'm a grandparent. I want my littlest grandkid to go to a school that is a have, that has good teachers, that has the same opportunities as right down the road. That's not irrational. In fact, I'd say it's in our Constitution.
Is it a matter then of more money? Go back to what I said. 32, one-third of all state general fund tax dollars now go to K-12. Is it a matter of more money to solve this?
More money is an issue. More money is an issue. When you see over the past, from I think it's 09 to 14, the expenditure per kid in the state of Wisconsin has gone up like 2%. That's over 5 years. I think it's 1%. Actually.
But I think it is in June when your agency, DPI, put out a press release. Next year, our 424 school districts
right.
are going to get $104 million more. So there's an upper in our baseline. So now you have this political debate. The Republicans say, yes, we're putting more money towards schools
right.
this year. Democrats say, yeah, but when you benchmark 4 or 5 years,
right.
who's right?
I think I'm right. First of all, $100 million, you know, for you and I, that's a lot of money. Out of a huge, huge budget, I'd say it's probably less than 2%. And that's enough to keep the lights on. So we need to prioritize. The governor said he's going to prioritize public education, K through 12, and I appreciate that. So let's see where we go from here. I'm looking forward to having a conversation with the governor. He seems genuine as his interest in public in K through 12. And I'm going to encourage him to think through, and I'm encourage him through my budget proposal, to look at it through an equity lens to make sure that every kid, not just kids in Eau Claire, but kids in Bloomer and Winter, get the same shake that everybody else.
How much more state aid do we need, drawing on the Legislative Reference Bureau summary, which says in this biennial budget,
right.
K-12 is getting $5.5 million. How much of an increase do they need?
5.5
billion.
Billion.
Over 2 years.
Yes. We're working on our budget now. That'll be a surprise. Stay tuned for that one. But we will be reasonable in our request, and We will be looking through a lens of having every kid having an opportunity. That is the kind of the equity argument. And that's where we want to be. That's where we want to focus our thinking. Yes, we're having some great success in our schools, outstanding success. Even in Milwaukee Public Schools, we're having some great success. We want to make sure we can sustain that, but we also want to make sure that we have every kid having that opportunity, and right now that's not happening.
Let's talk about Milwaukee Public Schools.
Sure.
Talk to me about this unique experiment that the Republicans loaded in the current budget,
yeah,
whereby the Milwaukee County Executive could name someone to what's to run what? Proper failed schools? What?
Yeah, it would be a handful of failed schools.
And, yes.
Yes, but...
All fell apart. Mr. Means left the job.
Right.
Okay, why did he leave the job? Was it because of the political fighting? Was it, first of all, go back to the experiment.
Right.
Was that a sound experiment?
Well, I would question it. I opposed it when it was proposed.
I know you did.
And it's kind of modeled after the recovery district in New Orleans, which we have a whole bunch of people saying it was great, and we have, I think, even more people saying it failed. And so given the mixed messages around there, I don't see that as an answer. I understand the frustration of people saying we got to do something. But I think that, first of all, the bill was written in a difficult fashion and it was hard to implement, period. But it got caught up into the issue of it's a takeover. It's taking authority away from the Milwaukee School Board. And that's always going to happen. So I'm not sure. I understand the frustration, but I don't think it was the right answer.
Were you disappointed when Mr. Means left, given that
you'd
worked with...
I know DeMond really well. I wasn't surprised that he left. If anybody was going to kind of bring people together, it would have been him. I mean, he's successfully lives in Milwaukee. He's got good relationships. But it was becoming about him, frankly. And I think, I can't speak for him, obviously, but it was becoming about him. And I'm sure he was looking at it as, this isn't going to succeed. I got a job. I got a day job.
Nick won.
Yeah, and so he's decided to pull the plug. But where we go from here, I don't know.
But let's talk about the reaction, the political reaction of the Representative Cuenca and the Senator Darlings is we're now even more concerned, even more angry at MPS. So
yeah.
Didn't this worsen the ability of leaders like Representative Cuenca and Senator Darling, both on Joint Finance, to work with MPS?
Well, it certainly broke some bridges. There's no question about that. But I think we'll see some proposals from MPS that I think will be relatively robust and hopefully put some people's minds at ease. I know they're working hard at that, and I expect to see some action around that from MPS in the next couple of months. So we'll have to stay tuned on that, but. The other thing that bothers me, and I understand legislative frustration, but to say, well, this didn't work, and so we're going to retaliate, that's kind of weird to me, frankly.
The idea, I think, that the Senate Majority Leader Fitzgerald saying maybe MPS is getting...
Yeah, getting too much
aid.
Or whatever, or we're going to make matters worse for you. You should have taken this deal because this deal over here is going to be even worse. I'm not sure that's a great negotiation strategy for public schools, but that's just my own opinion. I reiterate, there are some outstanding things going on in that district, just outstanding. They got like $300 million in scholarships this last year. It's just a huge amount of money to scholars that are graduating from their school.
But in his West Bend speech, Mr. Trump said the graduation rate at MPS is still 60%.
Yeah,
said it's one of the worst districts in the nation. His words, not mine.
Right.
How would you fix it if you could wave a wand?
Well, I would wave my wand to have, I think time is an issue. I think we need to expand the school year for them. I think we need to think about how we start school earlier and then we kind of fight that September 1st thing. I think time makes a difference. I think, and this is kind of a soft issue for me, but or important issue, but it's a soft issue for others, is that in order to build relationships of kids that come from difficult circumstances, it takes time. In order for kids to succeed academically, they have to have those relationships in place. And I think we need, you know, work on social emotional learning issues as well as academic issues, and that takes more time, and we need a longer school year for MPS.
How many weeks out of the year should MPS have school?
I think they should have school year round.
School year round.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Is that being seriously considered by any of the major policymakers in our capital?
I don't know about that, to be honest with you. But
that, is that going to be part of your recommendations?
I think there'll be something around that in my budget. Yes, absolutely. Time's an issue, but it's not just more of the same. It's more of this community building, building relationships with kids, so on and so forth, in order for them to succeed. It's critical. And I think the people in Wisconsin understand that. I spent a lot of time this summer thinking about equity with some national people, and I'm more convinced than ever that we can make some significant impact in kids' lives that are struggling academically for reasons that are beyond their control, and we can make a difference in schools. We also have to make sure that the communities that these kids come from have some stability, some economic development. You know, we're hearing about all that now, and you'll hear about it when you do your interviews later today.
Okay.
And but we have a role to play in that, and I think we can succeed, but I think we're going to need more time.
I taped an earlier newsmaker show, and you sat there and Mr. Mean sat there,
mm-hmm.
and it was a task force on the achievement gap.
Right.
Has that task force made any tangible progress, sir?
I think so. The answer is yes. We've created several professional development modules online where it starts with people kind of thinking through maybe their own internal biases as they look at and work with kids, going through strategic steps that they can take to make their classrooms better for kids that struggle. So yeah, we're making, and that's been used across the state of Wisconsin. We've made some inroads with higher education to make sure they understand their role in preparing teachers to do that. That all came out of that task force. So yes, it's not high profile in your face stuff, but it's stuff that's working.
Let's end the show asking about your role as a member of the Board of Regents.
Yeah,
you voted against the operating budget asking for $42.5 million over the next biennium. Why'd you vote no?
Because the budget that was proposed, I think, is still... the increase they're looking for is for not for regular stuff. It's for the important stuff that even, you know, making sure that everybody in campus is culturally competent, all these things, more dual enrollment, love all that. But it's not going for to make up for the $250 million that was lost in the last biennium.
Okay.
Something has to happen there, especially if there's no tuition increase, which I firmly believe that's like this tidal wave of support behind that. If there's no increase, we need more money to operate, or we're going to have more people laid off, and we're going to have less services for kids, and it's going to take them longer to graduate.
Senator Noss criticized the culture competence, culture sensitivity part of that.
Right.
Why is that needed?
First of all, I disagree with him. I get along with Senator Noss fine, but there's lots of research to show, and there was a good op-ed in the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel last Sunday that talked directly to this, about the research base around this is strong. We have lots of young people coming to this these fine universities that come from pretty homogeneous environments, and they come into college, and their ability to interact productively with kids of color and kids that come from different backgrounds, it's a struggle, and we have to prepare them for that. So, and there's good research to support that. So I know it's a mantra, oh my gosh, culturally competent, you're talking about white privilege, and we go down that road, and then everybody fights. Fact of the matter is we can do something to change it, and some education around culturally relevant things I think is really important.
Final question is this, as a member of the Board of Regents, U.S. Senator Ron Johnson just suggested that maybe there could be more online learning instead of classroom instructions in our 26 UW system schools. Your response?
Well, first of all, there is a lot of online learning going on in a number of areas. And second of all, he kind of put it in terms of, well, we can have fewer professors and we'll get rid of the bureaucracy and the cartel of the higher ed. You know, that was kind of overblown. And I think the Ken Burns tweeted that, you know, I like to support teachers, but my goal is not to replace teachers because that's inappropriate. We need to have teachers. We need to have someone working with kids to challenge them to think through what these things mean, whether it's civil war or whether it's a civil rights movement, and lay issues out on the table. That just can't happen by plugging, as he said, putting the cassette in the machine and let it go.
Understand. We're out of time. Tony Evers, Superintendent of Public Instruction, thank you for the preview of the coming school year.
Great.
Where are you going to be on the first day of school?
Milwaukee Public Schools. I think it's a school on the north side. I'm not sure where.
Okay. Tony, thanks very much.
You bet.
Thank you.
Yeah.